You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
Hey, hey, welcome to HR Bandit, the podcast where we talk about what's new in the world of work. This is your host, Ankita, with our best one yet. I'm so excited for our three stories today. So without further ado, I'm going to jump straight into it. First up, Coursera released its global skills report last month that reveals 7 key findings, and it's time to talk about it. For our second topic, New York City's new minimum pay rate for food delivery workers is creating quite the news. When they first announced their intentions, it was met with strong contention and the threat of lawsuits. And as of the 1st of July, there are lawsuits. For our third and final topic, the B suit, folks that make the C suit look good. Now, July has been an extremely happening month, so it was really hard to pick just three. So if you stick around, I'm going to also refer to those topics that almost made it to the episode, but didn't. But Bandits, no matter how great the topics, the best part of the show is always our guest for the day. I'm so pleased to introduce you to Benvin O'Grady. Benvin is based in Dublin and is the market HR lead for Google Ireland. Prior to joining Google, Benvin worked in a range of HR roles in financial services. She began her career as an employee relations consultant with IBEC. She's studied commerce in University College Dublin and University of Ottawa. And her free time is devoted to family, friends, reading, long walks, and a lot of baking in between. Benvin, I have a whole bunch of questions I want to ask you today. Before I do that, how are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you very much. And thank you so much for having me. It's a lovely opportunity to take my work hat off for a few minutes and just have a chat and share my personal opinions on stuff. So delighted to be here and thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'm delighted to have you here. And you mentioned baking. What's your favorite thing to bake?
Oh my God, it's hard to choose. I think generally I do a lot of easy, quick kind of tray bakes. So like brownies, flapjacks, things that will feed the kids for several days is usually my go-to. Or if it's a special occasion, all sorts of cakes.
Okay. Is there a speciality? Is there one thing that everyone demands Benvin make?
Usually my carrot cake.
Oh, I love carrot cake. Okay. I'm really glad I know that now. So the next time we run into each other,
I'll bring one.
Absolutely. Now, we are going to jump into our three topics very quickly, but there's one other question I want to ask you, and it's about threads.
Yes.
How do you feel about it?
Honestly, I have zero FOMO so far in terms of the thread space. I have never even glanced at Twitter, so I think I'm probably going to be the slowest person to take up threads in the place. So I can't say I'm an avid user of Twitter or threads at the moment, but I will watch this space. And it has been interesting to see how quickly it's taken off. Like, the numbers are amazing. So I will observe from afar, but I have not been tempted to look up much more about it yet. How about you?
I have massive FOMO. So for our listeners who may not be aware, when threads hit its 100 million users in 5 days, it was not with help of the EU. Because last I checked, and I'm so scared that things change so quickly, so threads may be available right now, but last I checked, not in the EU. But with that, Benvin, I'm going to jump straight into our three topics because we have a fair bit to cover today.
Yeah,
so
great.
Coursera's Global Skills Report is out now and is based on the data from 124 million learners across 100 countries. That's a lot. Now, it aims to answer the question, how proficient is your workforce in critical job skills? What are the most popular skills amongst learners in region? And how much of the workforce is preparing for an in-demand digital role? Now, Bandits, per usual, everything we refer to today will be linked in the show notes. So go in and take a look. But today, Benvin and I are going to pick our top findings from the report. Benvin, give us your first.
I'm going to cheat, Ankita, if that's okay, and pick two. I actually had to check when I first looked at the report, because you mentioned the numbers of people who completed it. It's such a vast number of, you know, so much information. It's a really, really thorough report. So I'm going to cheat, if that's okay, and pick two things that jumped out to me. So the first one that really jumped out to me was their first finding was about economic growth being tied to skills proficiency. And really, they were kind of saying that there's a strong correlation between higher skill proficiency and economic advances, like human capital potential, innovation, etc. And I suppose the thing that really struck me was, I think that's something that people would have anecdotally said. It's one of those things where you kind of say, that makes sense, but it's great to actually have the data and the proof of it now. That really, the more you invest in skills, the more the skills proficiency, the better that is for the wider economy. And I think the big kind of call to action for me under that one was, what is the role that governments can play? What's the roles that employment bodies can play? And what's the role that businesses can play? And then, you know, education, and that's a huge piece. So that was one that really jumped out at me. And then the second one that I was going to just call out, which I couldn't resist, this is why I had to have two, was about the fact that the report shows that in many countries, we are actually closing the gender gap in online learning, which I was just delighted to see. So really that balance is coming through on the online side. And particularly there was a piece about the STEM aspect of it. So it was saying that STEM related certificates, the enrollments from women increased from 25% in 2019 to 38% in 2022. And I just love seeing that. I know we still have tons of work to do in this space. But I think, again, that goes to show the more you support it, the online learning, the more you cover STEM for girls in schools, the more you encourage women to study STEM in university, the more we can have scholarships, everything like that, the more we can just increase that pipeline and get more women into those industries. So I was thrilled to see that. Definitely loads more progress to be made, but at least there is progress being made.
And I love how you took those two. And okay, before I say anything, right, I have a tendency to look at the dark side of things. You know, when I look at these things and I'm like, what's bad about it? And that's the first thing that'll come to mind. And on both of these, well, they are positive, but there are also a flip side that I was thinking about, right? So when it first says economic growth and skill proficiency, they found a correlation. There is definitely, I think, the connection of, you know, higher skills, you develop more and your GDP has a great impact. But I was also looking at the flip side, right? So if you were just unfortunate to be living in a country with low GDP, that impacts how proficient I can be at a skill. And that's the angle I was looking at. While it isn't, well, it's a terrible spin-off of it, but it is true. And I'm consciously looking at organizations and I'm like, what are we investing in these low GDP areas? How are we giving back to communities? Because it's a huge source of untapped talent, and it is related to one of the is the last key finding where it says skilled talent can be found anywhere in the world. And I was looking at like 0.1 and 0.7, and I'm like, the perfect story would be when we've really got to the stage where we've said we've tapped the skilled talent that's actually in the low GDP areas.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think it's a good, I accept the challenge, and I think it's a good way to kind of just reinterpret it. But I think for me, maybe I'm ever the optimist. We're a good pairing. I think for me, I was thinking, you know, the investing it will pay off in time. So, you know, you need to persuade governments and education bodies and companies that actually the more we invest in this now, whatever country it is, there is long-term payoff. You know, everybody wants to know what's in it for me. And it's really that point of the more we focus on skills development, the more proficient people become, the more we make things available to women, to men, to everybody, then actually that will actually help in the long term. So I was looking at it from this could persuade countries to invest more in this space. Because they can see the long-term gain.
Oh, absolutely. And I hope it does. And then there are a few quotes that I've repeated on this board a fair few times. And one of my favorites are companies as the new governments, because they're all, a lot of times when we're discussing topics, we realize companies and organizations are almost as powerful as governments in certain areas, if not more. So I think I'd be really curious to see as we go through the years, how the findings change, and then what is the role of organizations in themselves to ensure What are we doing about the findings from the report?
Yeah.
And I loved your second. Yeah. And I loved your second pick. Absolutely agree. Love that the gender gap in online learning is closing. And I'm really hoping that it also translates into our colleges and schools and everywhere else. And I love the part about STEM. We definitely 100% need more diversity in there. But I'm going to share mine very quickly. I think my biggest standout in the report is what was missing, right? Now, the report, and it says it focuses on three domains: business, technology, and data science. And it goes on to say that it focused on these skills and domains because these are the most popular and reflect the skills that the employers need. And the first thing that came to me was that stood out by elimination was art and finance. And I was growing up and I was told explicitly, you can't be an author and make money, right? It has to be another kind of skill because these are not dependable sources of income. But and when I was looking at this report and I'm like, I think it's still the case. I think the creative arts are still, unless you're really lucky and if you're like Coldplay, who's coming to Dublin next year, finally, or like any of our other artists, Taylor Swift, say, it's very likely you're going to spend years and years and not make much penny. Do you agree with Coursera's focus on these three domains?
Yeah, it's an interesting way to look at it. I think for me, I read it, you know, they're the areas that they're seeing most employment, most new roles, you know, are in those. And those are very big buckets. You know, business is a big, broad term. And the same with data analytics. So I think for me and technology, of course, I think the way I was looking at it, you know, just when you were saying that there about other types of work, so be it the arts, whatever it might be, I think we're nearly getting to a point now where no matter what role you're doing, there's going to, like, technology is going to touch it. So whether you're an artist tomorrow who decides I'm going to put all my passion into being an artist, most likely you're going to need to have a website. You're going to have a way of selling to people. You're going to want to do analysis of who's buying your products, you know, whatever it might be. It's nearly unavoidable, I think, at this stage that no matter what you go into, there's an element of, be it business, technology, data, to some degree or another. So I think there's certainly, I think it would be an interesting question to go on the flip side of what about those other ones that aren't there. But I can see that they're bucketing it into these are topics that really a huge amount of roles now and in the future are going to fall into.
Absolutely. And I don't think our generative AI could generate art without the help of some of our artists.
Exactly. So. Exactly.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
I'm going to pull us into a second topic with that, and this is our new minimum pay rate for delivery workers. Now, delivery workers for platforms like Uber Eats and DoorDash in NYC currently earn about $7.09 per hour on average. The new figure of $17.96 took effect July 12th and the plan is to eventually increase it to $19.96 by April 1st, 2025. Now, New York City Mayor Eric Adams says, our delivery workers have consistently delivered for us, and now we are delivering for them. This minimum pay rate, up by almost $13 an hour, will guarantee that these workers and families can earn a living, access greater economic stability, and help keep our city's legendary restaurant industry thriving. Not unsurprisingly, the platforms threaten legal action by saying it's going to raise costs and have an adverse impact on busy families who depend on the accessibility and convenience of delivery. It'll also adversely impact small restaurants working tirelessly to grow their businesses and even impact delivery workers who are seeking opportunities for extra income to make ends meet. Now, gig economy, of course, has had a very challenging history, right, from trying to get equal worker rights to fair pay. And I would have thought this was a great step, but given the lawsuits and the fact that this may halt, Benwin, how do you feel about the NYC move?
Yeah, I thought this was so interesting because when I read the article, it really made me reflect on my frame of reference, which is Ireland and is the EU, where employment rights are so strong and there's minimum wage in the vast majority of countries. And so it really made me kind of reflect for a minute to kind of really just, you know, acknowledge that, I suppose, that, you know, in certainly in Ireland and more broadly in the EU, once that employment relationship has been established, there is a wealth of protection in terms of employment rights, in terms of minimum wage. And of course, lots of companies then go way over and above that in terms of leaves, pay, of course, etc. So really, I think it just made me reflect on that element that, you know, you nearly take it for granted in wherever you're working that they're the rights of that country. But ultimately, I think, you know, my personal opinion, I think, is that it's the right thing to do. The article talks about the kind of economic stability that comes with introducing a minimum wage. And there's some obvious benefits of that for the employees, of course. But I think there's other elements, too. There's things that, you know, the article doesn't mention, but I think, you know, there's broader research on things like increasing employee satisfaction, motivation, even just consistency and people being more committed to roles. And that's a benefit for both, of course, the employees and the employer. And then I think there's a really interesting angle that you can go down, which is that kind of, does minimum wage or introducing things like this, does it help with equity on a broader scale? So equity across things like gender, race, you know, there's those elements as well. So I think there's those benefits. I think from a business perspective, my main kind of way of thinking is that you have to be reasonable with these things. You need to give companies time to plan for them. Of course, it might mean that they need to reassess costs. They might need to reassess their pricing model. And I think that is a reasonable ask to, you know, you can't suddenly just say tomorrow we're changing the rule on this. So I think companies have to have time to work through it. But there's also all of those benefits I mentioned for companies too. There's that consistency. There is it makes planning much easier. You kind of have a definitive, here's the plan. There's that motivation, engagement, all of that. So ultimately, I think it's a good move, albeit I have the frame of reference of countries where it's a very, you know, there's very strong employment rights. What do you think?
I agree. I agree. And I think there's some things we take for granted, but I'm also, there's always been this debate on, are gig workers really employees? Are they not employees? Do they be subjected to the same kind of rights? Or like, does a minimum wage be applicable? Is it per delivery? When you say per hour, if within that hour someone's employed with two delivery companies, how does that work? And I think to make a move as strong as this is really important. It kind of reminds me of a very recent Netflix case, right? Where it's obviously not to do with workers, but it is about them saying, we're going to boot you off if you're loaning subscriptions, right? And I think when they did a survey, 50% of users said they won't renew subscription. Like, if Netflix does this to us, we're not going to be a Netflix user. They still did it. And this quarter, they reported 8% increase in their subscribers. And this is like the 8% globally, but they did this only in the US. So literally everyone converted. So it's about, you know, a lot of people threaten to do things, but when push comes to shove, they'll do it. And I have a feeling it's going to be the same with the delivery organizations. They'll put the lawsuits, they'll try and push back. But I think it'll take time. There'll be some adjustment period, but it'll work. Like, I don't see it not working.
Yeah, I agree.
Perfect. Okay. I'm going to jump into our final topic. And this is actually my favorite. And it's a topic that I've been speaking about forever. But before we jump into it, I want to clarify that Fast Company does not sponsor this pod. But given the number of times I mentioned their articles on this podcast, they definitely should. So our last topic stems from yet another article by them. But it's also a problem that I have been grappling with for a while, and I can attest that most of my peers who at least I've spoken to are, because it is a pressing problem. So I want to take some time and talk about what we're calling the B-suit, our middle managers, the ones who really make our C-suit look good, but are also highly neglected. Now, I'm going to quote a few stats from the article. According to a study conducted by INSEAD, 80% of transformation projects initiated by senior management fail, yet 80% of projects initiated by middle managers succeed. The moral being that without your B-suit, transformation fails. According to Vizier's research, highly effective managers drive 48% greater profits than their more average counterparts, and they own staff engagement and retention. DDI tells us that B-suit leaders are 10x more likely to have high engagement from their teams and 6 times more likely to be able to retain top talent and 5 times more likely to prevent employee burnout. Now, the article has a whole bunch of other details, including 5 things we can do to help our B-suit. But Benven, how do you feel about these stats? And what do you think we need to do for our middle managers?
Yeah, you mentioned this is your favorite topic. And I was going to say I could talk about this all day. We need to do an extended podcast about this.
We should.
I just think our manager population, and the article references this, managers play such an essential role in companies. And great managers are truly invaluable, it without a doubt. I have no doubt about it. And when you actually think about the role that a manager plays, it's so complex, it's so multifaceted. They're leading a team, they're trying to influence up, they're dealing with the people above them. The article talks about the bureaucracy that managers have to deal with and kind of nearly translating things between different parties. So, you know, I just think, Where it works well and where you see the impact that a manager can have, and that data point you mentioned about transformations and where the middle managers are involved, how successful they are, it makes absolute sense because the middle managers understand the business. They understand what's happening. They understand what their teams are saying. They understand what the senior management are saying. You know, it's. I just think middle managers are so important. And so I think when it comes to like, what we need to do to support them, I think it's a challenge constantly to see how can we invest in that key group. Things like their personal development. Something that I always have top of mind is, you know, things like their own mental health, their own well-being, because they often take on a lot of weight of responsibility for their teams. And then a big one, which I always have front of mind when it comes to our management group, is recognition. I don't think lots of companies are always great at remembering that gratitude piece and the recognition. And really, that's something I always challenge myself with is, you know, have we actually acknowledged the huge contribution that managers are making, and the amount of things that managers have had to deal with over the last few years, things like COVID, you know, much trickier economic situations. So for me, it's really just constantly challenging to say, are we doubling down on investing in our managers? What do they need? What are their aspirations and career goals? Do we have the right support mechanisms? And then I think there's practical day-to-day things. You know, what is the frustration that managers often have? It's things like a lack of autonomy, a lack of decision-making ability, you know, not unclear accountability. And so I think the more we can do to really give that responsibility and autonomy to managers, because we know how brilliant they are and how valuable they are, we just really have to kind of make sure that's happening all the time. So yeah, sorry, I could talk about this all day, but I think in summary, I think it's a really, really critical group. What about you?
I love some of the things you've said, and you've like stolen some of my words, but I absolutely agree. Right? I think over the last 12 months, I've heard this term more than I have in the past. And it's basically, this is the worst time to be a manager in this economy. There's a beautiful HR article, HBR article that we've referred in a previous episode about manager tax, but it's also about like all of the things that you said, what we can do for them. And also because our audience is a lot of HR professionals, but the programs that HR creates, how all of them are like, okay, managers will drive these, right?
Yes,
and
yes.
I keep pushing back to say, make it very clear how many hours a month are you demanding of your managers from all of these 30 initiatives you have, especially when they come with yet another training program that's going to take, that's going to run over 12 months. And they're like, yes, managers should inspire. And the way to inspire and teach them how to inspire is to put them through a training. And I'm like, they don't have the time. Like, we're so quick to add things that managers should do. And a lot of times it's the middle managers. And we don't say how much work are we taking away from them. Like, what are we going to delete? How are we going to make their life simpler? And if you put that constraint of saying, our manager is not the one who's going to be doing this, who else can do it? How else can we make it happen? And I think now more than ever, that needs to be like, just stop. I think that needs, because we're asking them to push down a lot of company level decided decisions. We're having employees staging walkouts, hating on their managers, saying, you're making my life miserable. And they have to pretend to agree with the company's stance even when they don't, to their teams. So I do think like our role should be just taking stuff off their back.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great change. I think helping managers identify, you know, prioritization, delegating, and exactly to your point, it can't be a constant, here's another thing on top of another thing. It has to be, what can we, how can we free up time? What are the real things that you're bringing value to and that, you know, we actually need you to bring those skills to? Because I agree, they're, you know, our managers are, everything roots through managers, and it's a huge ask and a huge responsibility, and we have to acknowledge that and support them as best we can.
Absolutely. Maybe I'll get you back on the spot someday to have like a half hour discussion just based on our VSOOD. But
yeah,
I'm going to have to wrap us up on our three topics here at the moment. But I'm going to mention the two that almost made it that didn't. So first up, Shopify is making news. It's been making news since the start of the year on its war on meetings, but its latest is the meeting cost calculator. Bandits, again, I'm going to link it in the show notes before. We don't have the time to do a deep dive on it. We've discussed meetings multiple times on this pod, but it's definitely worth a look. And the second one, which almost made it but didn't, is the Women's World Cup. Benwin, something I know you're following very closely. Those are my two. But is there something happening out there in the world of work, Benwin, that you think should have made it to the pod but didn't? Or either of these two?
No, I would have loved the World Cup. Voice my support of the Irish women's soccer team who are in the World Cup for the first time, which is just amazing to see and so inspirational. And you know, I think it is getting more of the stage that it deserves and the attention that it deserves. I don't know if you've seen the amazing ad for the World Cup where they have various scenes of men playing football, playing soccer. And then it's AI generated. So the men's faces come away and it's actually the women playing football. I don't know if you've seen that ad.
I haven't.
It's really good, but it challenges people's biases and stereotypes. So it's an amazing marketing tool. But yeah, I definitely could have talked about the World Cup, but other than to say I'm behind Ireland all the way.
Perfect. The reason the World Cup really stood out for me and almost made it to the pod is because of the fact that the women are all getting paid this time. There are no interns, volunteering players and so on, but also the amazing fact that the average pay for them is still 25% of the average pay for the men's team from last year. So this year it'll definitely be higher, but I think there's a huge gap there, and that's because of viewership and marketing and everything else. And I'm so glad that it's getting the airtime it does, because I think that trajectory is going to take off.
Yeah, I agree.
Perfect. Benwin, before I let you go, one last question. Barbie or Oppenheimer? Which one are you going to watch?
I know which one I should say, but I'm going to say I'll probably go to see Barbie first. just for the fun. And, you know, I can't even imagine what it's going to be like. So I just, out of sheer interest, I think I'll definitely do Barbie. But I have no doubt I'll also see Oppenheimer, because I hear great things about it. What about you? Which are you going to prioritize?
Well, I am going to see Oppenheimer today.
Oh, great.
I really want to see Barbie. It's just that, you know, everyone's like this. They want to see it, but they don't want to tell the other person they want to see it. So you're just not finding people to see it with. But I'm so curious. Like any other time, I would not have bothered, but just the hype around it.
Yes.
It's going to be a sin to miss it.
Yeah, they've definitely got their marketing correct on this one.
Absolutely. Benjamin, thank you so much for joining us today. Any last words before I let you go?
No, just a huge thank you from me. And it's been a pleasure and would love to come back at some stage. Thanks and good luck with all your future episodes.
Thank you so much. Bandits, on behalf of NHRDN and Benvin, this is Ankita and we are out.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.